Okay, so welcome back everyone, bienvenue. And now it's my great pleasure to introduce Leila Perrier, who's a group leader also at the Institut Curie. As you see, I didn't do it on purpose, but I was looking for someone who could tell us about what happens in hematopoiesis. And so for those of you who were listening during my lectures, I did actually talk quite a lot about the way stem cell lineages were defined thanks to hematopoiesis and the realization that this classic model is actually fairly exceptional, but nevertheless has provided so much insight and furthermore is so important, obviously, in the context of disease too. So Leila was someone who I met when she first arrived at the Curie, and I followed her work closely at a distance. So I'm really happy, Leila, to have you come and tell us about what you're up to, and over to you.
Thank you, Edith, for the kind introduction, and I'm really happy to be here and meet you and discuss with all of you. So we're going to talk about hematopoiesis. So for the introduction, basically more than 90% of our cells are hematopoietic cells. So when you do this calculation, basically it's actually 84% that are red blood cell erythrocytes, but then the next one is platelet, which is also hematopoietic cells. Next one are bone marrow cells, and most of them are hematopoietic cells. So if you add up all of these, there are a lot of hematopoietic cells. Of course, if I look at you, I don't see your blood only, right? It's because those cells are very, very small. So we have a lot of them, but they're super, super small. And if you compare to the mass of muscle cells or adipocytes, well, basically that's what we see because they are larger and bigger. All this is not to say that hematopoietic cells are more important than others, but I found very striking that they are produced, so this huge quantity of cells is produced from these hematopoietic stem cells, and there are not so many. So we spent this pandemic reviewing the numbers of the hematopoietic system. And you will see it's not only a useful exercise for students, actually it has helped us to identify deep gap in knowledge. So you start with a few thousand hematopoietic stem cells and you get kind of amplification. And if you review carefully the numbers, the amplification is actually taking place really at the bottom of this tree or cascade. So just to help you grasp a bit these numbers, if you say one cell is equal 1 second, basically hematopoietic stem cell at the top or a few hours, and then red blood cells are hundreds of years. So that gives you an order of magnitude of these differences. And it's actually interesting also to see that you have such abundant red blood cells and that lymphocytes are the less abundant one and the megakaryocytes. So you also have huge discrepancy between these cells. And so reviewing these numbers, we actually found that 15 million of cells are uncharacterized. So if you take all the bone marrow cells and you quantify them, you look at what all the numbers that are known, 15 million cells are missing, which actually really intrigued me of what are they doing, where are they in the tree, and what's going on. So that was just to highlight, just by reviewing these numbers, we actually already found an interesting investigation line, I've seen. All right, so what is also interesting is that not only you get different numbers of cells, but they are also short-lived, and they have different half-lives. So red blood cells live longer than some of the myeloid cells or platelets. And if you do some back-of-the-envelope calculation, we spent a lot of time doing those calculations for all the numbers that were missing, you can see that the number of cells that are supposed to be produced each day just to replace the turnover, that then actually the red blood cells, there are many of them, but in terms of production, the other lineages are coming up also because they are more short-lived. So in terms of production, you do actually produce a lot of the other ones, not only red blood cells every day. So I thought that was an interesting perspective on this. Of course, then you can also derive the number of division, assuming there is no death in the system, and that gives you some ideas of how many division it takes from a stem cell to a mature lineage, and actually this is an information that is totally unknown for the moment. So, after this quantitative consideration, I want to tell you that the classical model of hematopoiesis that, as you said, has been very instrumental for stem cell biology is currently really changing. And it's not that we can't really draw a tree of how does it happening. So it started with this classical model where you would have... You will have a stem cell that will produce a multipotent progenitor. Then there will be a split in lymphoid lineage producing the lymphoid cells. Then the myeloid cells that will produce the red blood cells, platelets, and then myeloid cells. And we are others have shown actually that some of those progenitors are much more heterogeneous thanks to single cells. And that's basically some decisions are taken much earlier in this tree. And it's kind of now a big bubble here, and we don't really understand who is giving rise to whom and so on. And also with single-cell transcriptomic, people have been considering the whole process as a continuum now. So not only that you will have discrete step of differentiation with defined progenitor, but it's actually a continuum. It's funny that it comes from transcriptomic because if you look already at cytometry data, it is a continuum there. But I don't think people have really that in mind so clearly. So what I'm going to talk about today is that we have this representation as a continuum with much more heterogeneity, but in the end, this process, it's about division and differentiation. And you can draw many small trees with different combination of division and differentiation, but it's actually hard to reconcile this view that is very mechanistic in terms of cellular mechanism with this classical representation. So we decided to develop a system that will allow us to track division and differentiation and also lineages from single cells to try to reconcile some of these ideas. So this is the work of a postdoc in the lab, Tamar Tak, with a collaboration with a mathematician, Ken Duffy, and his PhD student, Giulio, and it's just published in eLife. I'm just going to say that we call a family descendant of single ancestor. So just for the clarification. So how does the system work? You take some bone marrow cells and you label them with this cell tracer dye. So that come in different colors. And then basically what you do is you sort your population of interest with cytometry like we classically do. And then you sort one cell, for example, that is called a SLAM stem cell, which is one category of stem cell. And you sort in a well one cell of the combination of the dye. So those cells, one cell will only have the blue dye, one cell will only have the green dye, and this one will have a bit of more green than the blue, and this one a bit more blue than the green. You put them in a petri dish, the four of them, you culture them, and then at a certain time point, you can analyze the cell type by the expression marker at the surface. You can identify the family based on the expression, so all the descendants that have green label, they come from the cell that was green at the start, the same for blue and so on. And then those dyes, their property is to dilute with division. So by looking at the dilution of those dyes, you can also count how many divisions the cells have gone through. So for each cell, you have these three information, where it came from which ancestor, how many divisions it has went through since this ancestor, and what is its cell type as a proxy from this fax data. So this is the type of data we obtain. Don't worry, I'm going to go into the details. But we had three different types of progenitors, two time points, two different cocktails. This is all the cell types we identify. Every row is started from one cell, so family. Every year you have the number of divisions. And the first take-home message from this is that it's kind of heterogeneous. It's not like everything is looking like each other. Okay, so what can we learn from this system? It's going faster. So first, wonder what type of fate symmetry we're going on. I'm not talking about division because basically it's not that I physically observe asymmetric or symmetric division, but I observe what are the cells becoming. So I classify them in four different groups. You have symmetry undifferentiated, like you start with a stem cell and that gives rise to two stem cells. You have asymmetry undifferentiated, which is the classical asymmetric division for stem cell biologists, where you start with a stem cell and one of the daughter cells is becoming a differentiated cell. But you also have symmetry differentiated, like a stem cell will give rise to two differentiated daughter cells, but they are of the same type, or they could give rise to two different differentiated cells that are of two different types, and I call that asymmetric differentiated. So when we take all the cells that have done one division, and that where we collect the two daughter cells, we could quantify how many of them were doing each of these four processes. And so if you just focus, for example, on the stem cell, what we see is that actually more than 60% are symmetric fates, basically, both symmetric undifferentiated and symmetric differentiated, and not so much are doing asymmetric fate, they have the asymmetric outcome. And there was not so much effect of the cocktail we use, and also there are not so many, there are some variation between the type of progenitor, but still it seemed that the symmetry type of outcome was the majority of the cases, which is a bit surprising because most of us have been focusing on asymmetry for a long time. So I thought, oh, maybe we should actually work more on symmetric division. Then we look whether within a family, all the descendants will have gone through the same number of division that I call division concordance, or all the descendants of a progenitor or stem cell will have different type, different number of division. So here we have to be careful in terms of mathematics, because if you would have a tree like this, so you start with a progenitor, four daughter cells will do two division, and one will only do one division. Because you have sampling effect, so it's not that you collect all the cells all the time. In general, we are more or less collecting 80% of the cells. You're likely to lose the cells that divided less because there are less of them. So basically, to actually, so it will look like more concordant than what maybe the tree is. So what we develop is a mathematical model that takes into account recovery. So we use the worst case scenario that we had in our data, 70%, and evaluated what was the correlation between daughter cells to decide whether they are concordant or not. So, so doing that, we actually find that the rho is the concordance rate. We find that actually, even taking into account this sampling, there is a high concordance in division, meaning that all the cells that derive from the same ancestor, they went through the same number of division. And this was also independent of the cocktail condition and the type of ancestor. So meaning that all the sister and daughter cells from the same ancestor, they went through the same number of division. So we also wonder if there was some differentiation without division. So we took all the cells that didn't divide, they are in generation zero, and quantify in which now cell type they are. So if you start with a SLAM HSC, which is in red, you end up being, when you don't divide, you're still a SLAM HSC. But if, and there is a lot of variation, but there is this group here, this SLAM plus MEP, which are more prone to become megakaryocytes, that actually occurs without division in more cases than with just by chance or sampling. So there are some cells that differentiate without dividing. Because we have the information on division, we also see that with division, differentiation is progressing nicely. If you take the SLAM HSC here, you see that this proportion is reduced each time you divide, and the differentiated cells are increasing in proportion. So with this assay, we cannot really now say whether division and differentiation are linked, which is an old question, right, that have been around for a while. But it seems that the two of them are happening. At least we can observe the two of them. Then in the hematopoietic system, you have a lot of different cell types. So the question was, all these cell types, are they arising from heterogeneity within a family? So one ancestor, one stem cell or progenitor can give rise to all of them? Or is it that you have a collection of different stem cells that make only some of the cell types, and you produce everything by the collection of these stem cells? So here we made a projection of all the phenotype that we observe and try to see whether the families here, that the cells are colored by their family, they will tend to be together just to get a feeling of whether this would happen. And what you see is that cells that are the same colors tend to be together. So you start here from the stem cell to the more differentiated cells on this axis, and they are more close to each other. You're not allowed to actually interpret distances of a UMAP as similarity. So we develop a statistical framework. And then what we observe is that basically cells from the same family, they tend to have similar fate, and it's more similar fate with their cousin or daughter cells than with cells from another family. So there is an effect, and of course with time you have more differentiation, but this effect is there all the time, whatever cell type you look at, and the cocktail condition also had no effect. So basically there is an inheritance process from this. So I will end up this part here, taking the saying from English, but basically we develop a system to allow to follow division, family, and differentiation. What we see is that families of cells are concordant in division and differentiation, which really, I was really happy to be here today, because it really says that there is an heritable property, a memory in the system. Not sure why and what's the impact on the general production of cells. And of course, now we are thinking about what is the mechanism of this. I'm happy to discuss about it. We also see that early differentiation, because those are the first step of differentiation we're observing here, they occur mostly with symmetric division. And that population heterogeneity is generated by different families of cells. And of course, as I said, we don't know if division and differentiation are linked, and this is something we want to explore. All right, so now in this second part, I would like to talk a bit about aging. So hallmarks of aging, stem, you have many of them, and one of them is stem cell exhaustion. So the idea is that the more you age, the less stem cells you have, and or they are not good enough, and that's why maybe we have a higher risk of cancer. So what is known in the hematopoietic system is that when the system ages, you get more myeloid cells that are produced. But in terms of cellular mechanism, it's not known what is happening at this stage. So whether you will get more stem cells or less stem cells, whether you get the same number of stem cells, but they produce more cells per stem cell. So there are different types of hypotheses, and we wanted to actually get a final answer on this very controversial question. So we made use of a tool that we have in the lab that I call genealomic, which is the single-cell genetic lineage tracing. So Sylvia introduced it very briefly. But the idea is that you do lineage tracing, so you trace the descendant of cells, but you use a tag, a genetic tag that is incorporated in the cells, and then all the daughter cells will inherit this tag. And it gives you information about the origin of the cells. So if you compare this cell type with this cell type, if the tag are shared, they have a common origin, so they come from the same progenitor cell. If they don't share the tag, they have a different origin. But if you count also how many tags you have, you will have an information of how many progenitor cells you have. And so, and you can also know a bit about the heterogeneity of the progenitor cells through this method. So there are many different genealomic technologies. When I was a postdoc, we used a viral barcode, so you integrate the genetic tag through a virus. So there is always a lot of question about whether the fact that you use a virus is going to change the fate of the cells or its behavior. So the field is really moving into a barcode that you can induce in situ, so that you can only do in genetically modified animals. And there is a lot of different systems to tag the cell in vivo. So those are polylux based or transposon. And I'm going to talk about one that we developed, the VDJ system. And of course, I'm not going to expand on this, but there is also a lot of research about natural barcodes, where you don't even need a genetic modified animal, so you could do it in human. And but of course, there are a lot of challenges based on the type of mutation, their kinetic, and their stability or not stability. All right, so We developed this VDJ-based system. So the idea was to use natural recombination systems that are in T and B cells. So T and B cells, they develop a receptor with a high diversity thanks to recombination of VDJ. So what we did here is to genetically engineer in a mouse a system where you have 1V, 1D, and 1J, and that it will be inducible and that you can induce this recombination in all the cells, not only T and B cells. So how does this work? When you have Cre expression, basically this cassette is flipped and then RAG2 and RAG1 and TDT are expressed. So what they do is basically RAG2 and RAG1 cut all the elements that are in between the V, D, and J and they put them together. When they do that, they also delete some of the nucleotides. And TDT is able to do insertion between the segments, and that is the diversity, that is basing the diversity of the system. You remove the poly-A system, you have GFP expression, so you know which cells have recombined. So if you want to work with it, you can enrich for them. So the barcode now, the genetic barcode, is this recombination. When it has recombined, it is stable, it is inherited by the daughter cells, so that you use for lineage tracing. Just to give you a flavor, on average, we have 10 in deletion and few insertion. So some of the barcode, they look like each other when they have no insertion or no deletion. So the first thing we did with this new system to check that when you induce, you get a GFP signal. One, of course, obvious question for us was, because this is a system that comes from lymphocyte, if you induce it, would you change the differentiation of your cells? It's not what we see. The GFP cells in proportion in all the lineage are not changed, meaning that it's not skewing differentiation. I'm going fast, but we develop a system to be sure of the quantification after sequencing of our barcodes, because to make a very long story short, this is a random recombination, so to distinguish that from sequencing errors, this is a challenging. But in the end, with our bioinformatic pipeline, we get a very nice correlation with cell numbers and the identity of the barcodes. So one of the difficulties of the system is what I call repeat usage. So if you have two cells that are labeled with the same barcodes, then it looks like they are multi-outcome and they were not, right? And so, of course, you saw that the system is very diverse, but you have some preferential recombination. I will call them the lazy one, not having insertion, not having deletion. So we use a mathematical model that was developed by Alexandra Valsak and Terry Mora and Yuval and Audi at l'ENS to learn from the data what is the recombination probability, and for each barcode to know if it's a barcode that is very frequent or not very frequent. Of course, then in your analysis, you want to use the more infrequent barcode than the frequent barcode. So this is the type of the distribution of probability we get from the data. And one way to check that everything is behaving well is that you can compare barcodes shared between mice. If you share a barcode between mice, it means that this barcode has this recombination that occurs several times. And what we see is that basically the barcodes that are shared, they are the barcodes that have the highest probability, so the more frequent one. And then the one you want to use for analysis are the barcodes with a low frequency, the more rare barcodes, because then you don't have this situation or you're less likely to have it. Going fast on this. Okay, so this was about the systems. Let's go back about the aging question. So we bleed the mice every month up to 15 months post-induction, analyze the myeloid cells also in the bone marrow at the 15 months, and then detect our barcodes at every month. So what you see here is the number of myeloid cells. In our system, we get an increase in the number of myeloid cells with age, so we recapitulate this phenotype. So the first thing was to know how many stem cells are contributing in general. So we quantify by counting how many barcodes we have, how many stem cells are contributing, for example, at month 15. So in general, I make the estimates here, you have a few thousand of stem cells that are contributing, and there are variations between organs and cell type. But there are a lot of them, so it's actually matching quite well the numbers that were produced deriving from the phenotypic gating of the stem cells. And here we are independent of kind of phenotypic. I will explain more why later. And then we can quantify how many cells are produced by each barcoded cells. You can call them barcode retaining cells, so the cells that stay and that keep a barcode. And what you see is that not all of the stem cells have the same size, right? Some produce a lot of cells and some produce less, but you have this disparity. So what is going on with age? So one point here, it's again about the analysis, because we have such a diverse... So if we find thousands of barcodes in 200 microliters of blood, you can imagine that each time you sample the blood, you are less likely to get the same barcode twice. It's like taking few balls from a big swimming pool. You don't find the same color each time, but it doesn't mean that they were different color in the pool. It's just because you take so few of them. So because of that, we can't follow every month the identity of the barcode, but we can, from the sampling, estimate what was the size of the total pool, and that's what we are working with. So we see this type of evolution. Here we use an index to measure the diversity that is called a Simpson index, but the result all whatever index you use. And so what? And we also develop a mixed effect model with a collaborator in Ireland to be sure about our results. So what we observe is first a decrease in the number of barcodes over time. So that is explained by the fact that you start with a system that is ubiquitous, so you induce barcodes everywhere in this tree. And then with time, you have some cells that die and turn over, and then the upstream barcodes are replenishing this pool. And if you wait long enough, then you just get the barcodes from the top of the hierarchy, from the stem cell. That's how I will define my stem cell here, is that the cells that or long-term retaining barcodes, so they can produce cells over time. And so this kind of drop is actually just reflecting the time it takes to wash all the intermediate steps from the stem cell. And then, very interestingly, we also see an increase over time. And so this is actually suggesting that there is a change in clonal composition, and you get more stem cells that contribute to myeloid production over time. And if you look at how many stem cells are produced, how many myeloid cells are produced per stem cell, you have an heterogeneity, but over time this heterogeneity is not changed, saying that it's not that you get more myeloid cells because each of the stem cells is producing more myeloid cells. Really what we observe is that you get this increase in myeloid cells production due to the increase in the stem cell that contributes. So the conclusion of this part is that we develop a new quantitative in situ barcoding system that is has a lot of diversity and is relatively easy to implement compared to CRISPR-Cas9 barcoding system. What we see is that hematopoiesis without transplantation is a composed of very diverse population that have each of the stem cells have a different clone size. And we see that the increase in the myeloid cells production with aging is due to the increase in the number of stem cells, but not a change in their clone size, which for me was puzzling because it seems that there is no sign of stem cell exhaustion. Stem cell exhaustion will mean you have less stem cells or they are more potent, each of them. This is not what we see. And so, of course, it opens a lot of questions about myeloid leukemia. There is more myeloid leukemia with age. Is it that the idea would be that you have stem cell exhaustion, but if you have more active stem cell, do you have more mutation? So this type of question. And so to tell you why does it matters, we actually had a very simple idea, is that we notice that if people look at lineage tracing in cancer, looking at the evolution of mutation. So in blood cancer, it's a bit special compared to other systems, is that a lot of patients actually have what we call a linear evolution. So it's that mutation occur on top of the previous mutation. And so most people in the field believe that there is natural selection, because to explain this model, you actually think, yeah, well, for a mutation to take over, you need a strong selection. But we were a bit puzzled about it, and so we ran some simulation. And so, of course, if you have natural selection, you do have strong selection, and you can reproduce in silico this type of linear pattern. But if you have, you change the number of stem cells, and this is very trivial for people working in evolution. If you have less stem cells, you can also have this type of pattern just because there is natural evolution and drift. So the issue here is that we actually don't know how many stem cells and cancer stem cells there are in human in this disease. So we have to be careful about our assumption about natural selection. I think natural selection could play a role in some of the patients, and that's what the point of this paper. And it's also important because a lot of strategies are designed with the assumption that there will be natural selection, and that's not the case, or in some cases we think it might not be the case. Okay, so with this I stop here. I think I thank the people along the way from my lab, the collaborators, and also the funding agency, and I'm happy to discuss with you.